You are listening to Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson, and we're at the Aspen Ideas Festival in Aspen, Colorado. That song was called Older, and my next guest has been thinking lately about what it means to get older, or at least what it used to mean. Susan Orlean is best known as the author of The Orchid Thief, and her latest book is called Lazy Little Loafers. It's a children's book. She's a staff writer at The New Yorker and one of the finest observers of life in America that I know. Susan, welcome.
Thank you.
Before we go on, lazy little loafers, you don't mean shoes.
No, I in fact mean the babies that ought to be factored into our full employment program. It's a book about raising the question of why children don't have jobs and what we can do about it.
And you've got a four-year-old, so one of those
working.
Underemployed
he's
millions.
Working. That's why he's not here tonight. He's working.
There you go. But rather than talk about the next generation directly, you're going to talk about the last generation and the sort of gigantic resets that our parents' generation endured. Take it away.
All right. My father, Arthur Orlean, was born during World War I, served in World War II, came into his own during the Depression. He was part of the generation that is known in shorthand as the greatest. They were considered the greatest because they were brave, they were resourceful, and they were inventive. But most of all, I think their greatness lay in their resilience and optimism to ride out what were often sour times. In the last few months, as I've watched the economy curdle and my confidence in the future flatten, I've thought about this gift for optimism and wondered how my father came by it and whether I'll find it in myself. Does optimism pass down directly, or does it skip generations, just like eye color does? My father's father, for instance, was undone by his life's downturns. He had deserted the Tsar's army in Russia around the turn of the century and made his way, hat in hand, to America. Working as a carpenter and then on a modest scale as a developer, Sam Orlean made a just barely middle-class life for my grandmother and their four children. When the stock market crashed in 1929, my grandfather lost his buildings one by one. The Depression left him wary and disillusioned. He refused to even try to rebuild his business once the economy revived. And he told my father he never wanted to own another building and would never work for himself again. The effect of the Depression on my father was nearly the opposite. He accepted it as a challenge. He was only 14, but he started working. He worked through high school, worked through college, and after his years in the Army, eked out enough to pay for law school. Ignoring the bitterness of my grandfather's real estate experience, my father decided to become a developer. He built a few buildings, made good on them, built a few more. Eventually, my grandfather went to work for my father, becoming his own son's employee. That arrangement made concrete this essential difference in how they managed hardship, how differently they metabolized a new reality. The world I grew up in was a product of that difference. Instead of a legacy of shrinking expectations from my grandfather, I am my father's daughter. And his perspective was that opportunity was expansive, almost limitless. I miss my dad in a million ways, but never as much as I have recently, as I felt the seismic shifts in the world and wondered where we'll be after it settles. I wish I knew how my father became a person who saw change and even dramatic failure as motivating rather than immobilizing. I also realize quite wistfully that I finally understand him now much better than I ever did. As much of an optimist as he was, he never had a casual attitude towards money or material comfort, something I am coming now to understand. Having been formed entirely by the comfortable life he built for us, I used to find his little frugalities annoying and his concern about being practical stifling. Until the day he died, even after I'd published 7 books, even after I'd been on staff at The New Yorker for 15 years, even after Meryl Streep had played me, a writer, in a major motion picture, my father nagged me to go to law school so that just in case being a writer didn't work out, I'd have something to fall back on. I thought it was a ridiculous suggestion, since I just never imagined there could be a fall. My father passed away a little less than 2 years ago. He had a lot in his life, but he never took any of it for granted, ever. I believe that if he had lost it all, he wouldn't have been happy, but he wouldn't have collapsed in despair, wouldn't have felt robbed, wouldn't have been mad at the world. He would have begun again, as he had before, not loving the deprivation, but certainly accepting the challenge, maybe even excited by the idea that what would emerge would be possibly better than what he'd lost, and at the very least, it would be something new. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Susan Orlean on stage here at the Belly Up Nightclub at the Aspen Ideas Festival. Susan, you mentioned your father's little frugalities, and having had parents of that generation, I think I know exactly what you mean. What are some of the specifics that even after he could afford whatever he wanted, he still...
Well, I think what captured it for me was my dad loved cars, and at one point, and he was very successful, at one point he had a beautiful vintage Rolls Royce, he had a very expensive Mercedes sport car, but he still insisted on saving old coffee cans and old tuna fish cans and nailing them into the wall in our garage and using them to keep, you know, nails and screws and bolts. And I would say, Dad, there's the Container Store. You can get, like, really nice. And he said, what's wrong with these? These are perfectly good. He, in fact, I actually ended up with this beautiful, one of his beautiful cars. And the other day I was laughing because I'd gotten in the car. And my dad, rather than buying fancy Mercedes custom floor mats, took some old carpet from the house and cut it to go in the car. And, you know, it worked. It worked. And there is a disconnect between people who made their own way in the world and people who are born into comfort. And it's understandable. And my father made his own way in the world, and he built all these buildings. And my brother, after being a lawyer, yes, went to work for my dad. And my father used to say, you know, I know every single apartment in every one of these buildings that I own, and your brother has a different attitude because he simply had them, he inherited them. And it's got to create an enormous disconnect in how you look at money, but even how you look at values.
But as you now have this young son and are raising him, are you going to try to figure out ways of making him not have the downside of having it all given to him?
I remember one day when I was a teenager, my father just looked me in the eye and he said, I just want to make one thing clear to you. You are not a member of the idle rich. And it meant something, and it actually stuck with me forever, I think. And by the same token, I feel strongly that, first of all, by the time this economy continues collapsing, my son won't have the opportunity to be a member of the idle rich.
And if
anyway,
you keep doing public radio, you'll never be a member
right.
of the idle rich. Susan Orlean is a staff writer for The New Yorker. Her latest book is called Lazy Little Loafers. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.
And this is Studio 360 from PRI and WNYC. We are at the Aspen Ideas Festival in Aspen, Colorado. When we come back, more from They Might Be Giants. Stay with us.